the seven pillars of health, and many others on our website, saveus.org. Get a copy of today's program. Your gift of $6 or more to Save America Ministries. Just call us 1-800-SAVE-USA and become a partner with us. Day after day, we're preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour. And if you don't prepare yourself with health, you may get to see the Lord a lot sooner. Thanks for joining us. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Remember, you make the choice, God will help you make the change.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of IRN, its advertisers, or affiliates.
deeply ashamed of themselves
what
for not caring.
Possibly admit something like
the
that.
Scripture that
Why
came to my mind was the one about Abraham that said,
lose all the benefits of being a
I believe,
bureaucrat.
Hebrews 11,
that
he was
wrong.
Looking for a country of his own.
Well, anyway, now, of course, there's going to be lots of
here was
cases
righteous Abraham looking
up
for a country
when
of his
next cases be coming to court?
Of his own.
As soon as they have the hearing.
And yet so many of you don't want a country for your own.
Have enough money to pay
for your own children and your grandchildren, for your own people.
Something like 2 or 3 billion.
You see, that's why the prophets cried so very often. They weren't crying babies.
There is going to be hearing.
But they cried not only for the personal salvation of the people, but for their nation. They were always for their people.
The problem is,
and when they could see the nation of their people sinning against their God and thus causing their God to come against them as an enemy, they out of love and concern would cry out to him. Ezekiel.
Of the
he wrote about will he find men
the
standing
case
in the gap to
so
cry
example,
out. And he wrote this in Ezekiel 21:31. Quote,
born in 1992.
And I shall pour out my indignation on you.
Made in 1995 or
I shall blow on you with
first
the fire of my wrath.
Of the act because no one knew that there was an association between the vaccines and the autism, including me. But let's say you were the smartest person on the planet, and let's say you knew it. So you called up the act and you said, I want to file before this act because my child was damaged by thimerosal. And the answer would have been, the act doesn't cover thimerosal. At that point, it had not, and it did not until 2001 or something. But yet, they're going to tell you that if you come now, you didn't come on time, even though you couldn't have come on time. And worse than that, you have a civil remedy. That means that in your state, most states allow you to go after the person that's harmed you, which in this case is the vaccine manufacturers, until the child is 18 years old, some states it's 21. But what they claim is that although if you go to the act and you lose, you can sue in state court or federal court. If you go to the act and you win and you don't like the judgment, you can sue in state court or federal court. But if you don't go timely, you lose all remedy. So what they're saying is these 2 million people who did nothing wrong, they took the vaccines like they were supposed to, they reported to their doctor, have no remedy. That's their position. No remedy whatsoever. And the people weren't so upset about it because they said, well, even if we could sue, we couldn't win. But now the government says you should be paid. But by the way, you can't come. That's not American justice. Additionally, by conceding that the vaccines have to do with it, it brings up a whole new idea of treatment, which we've talked about before. These kids have high levels of mercury. They can be treated. They have high levels of testosterone. The idea that all you should do is send them to a psychiatrist is ridiculous. And by the way, that can be confirmed. Anybody who thinks their child has been damaged by mercury, there's a simple urine test that you can run called urinary porphyrin, which there are 30 peer-reviewed NIH publications that say that if you measure the porphyrin and you get a specific pattern, it can be caused by nothing but mercury, and it's a non-invasive test, meaning it's just a urine test. It's available at LabCorp, it's available at Quest, it's available, you know, to any doctor. It costs, you know, $20 or $30 or something like that. Anybody can do it, and by the way, that's part of the reason I think that they conceded. This child we worked up, and we have the laboratory proof. How can you deny this? It's not done at some esoteric research lab. We're talking about Quest and LabCorp, which are, you know, if you go to your local doctor and you have a blood test run, I can almost guarantee you it goes to Quest or LabCorp. They do most of the work in the country. So we have a biomarker. We can not only determine that statistically the children who got vaccines have more autism, we can show you which one, and we can even show you why, and because it has to do with the genetic susceptibility to mercury. So there's a terrible thing going on, which is there are millions of kids who've done absolutely nothing wrong, and they're ineligible to be compensated, even though the government says that at least some of them were damaged by mercury, but too bad. And you can't sue the vaccine manufacturers. At least that's their position. And that's not American justice. That can't stand.
Well, what about the treatment that I know that you and your son, David, have come up with, whether you suppress the testosterone and then you chelate them? And I understand that you told me that actually some of the people who've listened to our programs in the past have contacted you. We've got a few of the children under treatment. But how are you doing? You have over 200 children under treatment now, or at least you're following what's happening?
Yes, we've actually worked up around 400, and we have about 200 under treatment. We only treat the ones that actually fit the biochemistry that we're you know, looking at, and the treatment has been beyond my belief. I never believed that we'd be able to help them as much as we have. Most of them improve dramatically, rapidly. They never become perfect, I don't think, but it makes a big difference in their lives. And in fact, despite the public health disliking us by talking about the vaccines, they've actually started to talk about hormonal manipulation being an important part of treatment of autism. American Academy of Pediatrics actually has mentioned that. They don't mention our names because our names are, radioactive. We're the ones that say that it's the vaccine, but we're the main people doing the hormonal treatment, and they've even conceded that that probably is a reasonable thing to try to do. But unfortunately, most pediatricians in the country don't try to do that kind of thing, don't do simple measurements in your blood to see that you need it done.
All right, so basically what you want to do is determine that there's a higher level of mercury in the... Is the mercury level in the blood or in the urine? Is it in both?
We determine the mercury level in the urine, and then we determine the androgen, testosterone, in the blood.
All right.
And if those are elevated, then you're a good candidate. And a lot of the kids also have symptoms that you might expect from high testosterone. They're aggressive, they break things, they're super strong, they have precocious puberty, or at least signs of precocious puberty, meaning that they masturbate at age 4. They have a mustache. No, it's not normal for a 6-year-old boy to have a mustache. It's not normal for a 5-year-old girl to have pubic hair. Those are not normal things. And if they have those things, they have precocious puberty. And if they have autism, if you correct the precocious puberty, the autism will get a lot better.
Well, now, of course, do they have the precocious puberty because they have autism? Or do they have autism because they have precocious puberty? Which comes first?
Well, we believe that the mercury blocks biochemical pathway, and we've published on this, in a specific way that we predicted that with that block, it will raise the testosterone level. And we did this before we ever tested it, and now it's been confirmed by numerous studies all over the world that we're exactly right. If you have mercury, you make too much of your androgens into testosterone and not enough into a storage substance. And therefore, you have high androgens. And if you lower the androgens, and you could actually get rid of the mercury yourself. We don't actually chelate most of the people. Most of the people, if you correct the testosterone thing, they will get rid of their own mercury. So, but it's a very, very good therapy. And I'm sure there are others. But what really is annoying is for doctors to say that your child has a psychiatric illness. Your mother didn't treat them kindly enough, and that's why they are the way they are. When a simple the problem with these kids, by the way, is not that their laboratories are too normal. They have multiple abnormalities. Anybody who would bother to draw blood will see that, or do a urine test will see that. And in fact, the recent NIH studies that they're going to do on autism, they refuse to draw a single blood on any of them. You know how doctors, no matter what's wrong with you, you go and you have your blood drawn for some basic tests? They're not going to do it, because if you do it, you'll see it. So they have to do things like just psychological testing. They're not going to draw the blood because it'll be apparent to anybody who draws the blood or does the urinary porphyrin that it's right. And now their own scientists say it's right. And, of course, as I said, now this recently Harvard, the University of Iowa, there's a whole bunch of Hopkins, there's a whole bunch of places now supporting this. It's raining on their heads. The papers that they say don't exist, we filed hundreds of papers in that lawsuit, which they don't want to put up on the website. But these are mainline publications from major universities all over the world.
And, Chris, they show the relationship between the mercury and the onset of autism, is that right?
Yes, correct.
And, ladies and gentlemen, this is one of the greatest human tragedies. We're talking about losing 2 million young people, mostly boys, predominantly a disease of boys. 1 in 60 boys in America, has autism. I mean, how can you explain something like that? What's going to happen to so many of our young boys? And Chris, if they don't have autism, they have ADD or ADHD or learning or other disabilities. All manifestations of this terrible poisoning has taken place. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, we have David Geyer, and we have Dr. Mark Geyer on the line. And David, are you still working for your PhD?
Yes, I'm still doing lots of research. I'm involved. We keep pretty detailed statistics on our patients, and we've been recently publishing on that. Recently had an article published in Neuroendocrinology Letters doing an assessment of testosterone levels on about 100 kids now with autism that have been seen at my father's clinic. And what we're finding from our experience is that between 80 to 90% of the autistics that we test have one or more high androgens testosterone metabolites outside the reference ranges. And so we've been publishing on that, and then, of course, seeing what the treatment does and the remarkable results tracking those things.
Well, now, of course, your dad was saying that you were chelating the children, that they were actually able to get rid of the mercury on their own once they got the testosterone level down. Was that right?
Yeah, a high testosterone blocks a pathway that makes a substance called glutathione. Glutathione is the body's natural way to excrete mercury. And what happens is that high testosterone inhibits a specific enzyme in that pathway, and that will lower glutathione levels. What we see with doing Luprin therapy and other anti-testosterone medications is that the level of glutathione seems to usually double or triple on the therapy. If you have more glutathione, you'll start self-chelating out mercury.
And so there's really no advantage then to actually chelating it. The human body will take care of it on their own then?
It'll do a significant job. Sometimes we have to come back and my father will treat with some chelators to remove any remaining mercury.
Now, what sort of chelators do you use? Do you use intravenous? Do you use dermal? Do you use rectal suppositories? Do you use something orally? How do you chelate when you do chelate? And what's the best form of chelation?
From experience, or my father's experience, there are basically, as you mentioned, there's the oral route, which is standard Chemet or DMSA, is available in capsules. It's oral. You swallow some pills. The IV is you put it directly into the bloodstream. That's kind of invasive. What generally he's using is to do rectal suppositories. And the nice thing about rectal suppositories is that you bypass the gut. When you take oral capsules, it goes through the gut and it can cause some agitation. By using rectal, what you're using is the blood vessels down in that region, and so it never goes through the gut. It's absorbed directly into the bloodstream. And we primarily use DMSA or DMPS.
All right. And so... anyway, now I know that Dr. Mark had mentioned that actually some of the young people had actually been put into homes because they could not function in a regular home. They had to be put into institutions. Have actually been able to get out? Is that right, Mark?
Yes, that we have several teenage or older kids that have what they call meltdowns. That is, episodes where their testosterone gets so high that they hurt their parents, literally. You know, life-threatening injuries, break their arms, whatever, and the authorities have taken them away. But in between those episodes, they get along in their family, and we've gotten some of the mental institutions to allow us to treat them with Luprin, and as long as you keep their Luprin...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Mark Geyer was saying that some of these young people, when they get into their teens... they will, of course, have episodes of violent behavior really related to their testosterone level, and they'll actually hurt their families, they'll break their arms, they'll do a lot of damage at home, and they're taken and putting into institutions. But actually, they've actually been able to get some of the institutions to put these children onto Luprin, which suppresses the testosterone, and they've actually been able to come home, and return to their home environment.
Yeah, let me just say something about autism and what we're talking about as far as the symptoms are concerned.
Right ahead.
People need to appreciate, and it's very easy not to know, not having seen autism, but having worked with my father and seen over 400 kids, teenagers, young adults with autism, this is a very, very serious disease. The authorities, I always stick in my mind, you go to the CDC website, they now have a page on autism, and they have kids laughing and playing and smiling. That's not autism. It really isn't. Autism is a very painful thing for the child, for the parents, and it gets to be very serious. It's one thing when you have a 3 or 4 year old that's hyperactive, is hitting people, banging his head. But having watched teenagers, young adults come in and do that, I've personally been slugged by some autistics. It is very serious, and the levels of testosterone, back to the children, what we see is for a child, let's say, under age 10, they're supposed to have a testosterone less than 10. Maybe we see a kid with 20 or 30 or 40 as a level. When you get into the adults and you start having levels that are in the hundreds, that's what's normal, and we see patients with autism that are in the thousands. I mean, these kids or teenagers, it's like they're on steroids. It really is. And they go into steroid rages, and it can be not a very pretty picture.
And, of course, if you can actually get that testosterone down, why, suddenly you can alter this whole situation. And once you get the mercury out, then, is the body self-regulating and will tend to keep the excessively high testosterone levels from developing?
Well, we've done this now for about 4.5 years, and the honest truth of it is some of the kids you can do that to, and maybe can put them on a very mild anti-testosterone, take away the Lupron, and they stay better. You know, they've improved and they stay where they are. Some of them you can take completely off all meds and they stay where they are, and some of them go back to being aggressive and autistic, and we have to keep giving them Lupron, and some of them may have to take Lupron for the rest of their lives. But on the other hand, the alternative is they can be in an institution taking SSRIs, which are just as expensive and far more dangerous and far more expensive for the rest of their lives. So we don't have, 30 years of experience on this, but that's my feeling. Some of them will be able to get off of it. Some of them will be able to go on a milder medication. And some of the kids are going to need the Lupron for indefinitely.
And it's not just that they'll be on SSRIs and other psychiatric meds. What's going to happen is they're going to be on all of those, and it's not going to be enough. There's going to be restraining and physical ways to try to control them. Although having, again, as I said, witnessed this kind of thing, one or two big guys with a teenager or a young adult with autism and a rage, they're no match for the child.
We have a 9-year-old that 4 big guys can't hold down because his testosterone is so high and he's so strong. I had a 5.5-year-old. Who crawled under my chair in a rage, and he picked me in the chair up and threw me across the room. And I weigh 200 pounds. That can't be done by a normal 5-year-old, I can guarantee you. But if you have a very high testosterone level, you can either hit home runs like Barry Bond, or you can pick up people that are superhuman. These kids are superhuman in strength, and they have no control of what they're doing. And we're going to all live with this. And more you're going to see it. A number of the violent acts you read about, shootings, many of these kids have autism. Number of the shootings in the schools, those kids either had ADD, ADHD, or most of them had autism. The one that shot 30-some kids at UVA, I saw an interview with his grandmother. He had a diagnosis of autism. He was taking some of the psychiatric meds. And then he wasn't real severe. He was with it enough to get the gun, and he killed 30 people. This is going to happen if we don't treat these. These kids can't help it. And they have those high levels, and they go into a testosterone rage.
And I think it's really so important that we realize this. We're talking about 2 million children out there here in the United States, and it's all unnecessary. And there have been a few people who have been on the front lines of this battle for a long time, and including our guests this evening, Dr. Mark Geyer and his son David Geyer. And they've done everything they could to try to bring this information forward, and they've been attacked and vilified and demonized and, but, of course, you do what's right, ladies and gentlemen. You do what's right, and, of course, eventually, here's the case where the good guys are winning. The government has conceded the first vaccine case of the 5,000 they have. Of course, you're not hearing about it. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dr. Mark Geyer, David Geyer is working with his father as they're trying to get the information, get the statistics. I mean, they were able actually to get into the Centers for Disease Control database. The Centers for Disease Control didn't want them to get in, didn't want them to see what the CDC already knew about the relationship between the thimerosal in the vaccines and the incidence of autism. David, what did you actually find when you got in the database and were able to analyze it?
Well, what we found in the government database, it's called the Vaccine Safety Data Link, or VSD database. This database is composed of the medical records of patients primarily out in the West Coast and at various Kaisers. And what we did was analyze the amount of mercury children got in the vaccines and the risk that they had for being diagnosed with autism and other neurodevelopmental disorders. And what we found and what we've published is that the more mercury children got in the vaccines, the higher their risk for autism and other neurodevelopmental disorders. So that their own data confirms that, and we've reviewed many of the internal CDC studies back in the early 2000s where they were studying the same database and they found the exact same effects. And we have emails and transcripts from closed-door secret meetings where it was admitted that basically they couldn't let this information get out to the public, because if the public was aware of this, they wouldn't vaccinate their children anymore, and they deemed that to be an unacceptable risk. So it was decided at these meetings that they were going to cover up, conceal, minimize the effects that they observed, and through a series of rather elaborate contortions, they basically published studies claiming that they found, to use their words, no consistent significant effect, which in layperson's terms means that they found effects, but they decided that, well, those effects didn't really mean a whole lot, and decide which you should take the vaccines anyways. We, unlike the government, when we found these effects, we've been willing to publish it, to release it, and to just call it like it is and say that there is an effect here. We need to recognize that problem. We need to work as rapidly as possible to get mercury out of the vaccines and try to get some compensation and treatment for the children that have been damaged.
And what will happen tomorrow is they will again be vaccinating pregnant women with full-dose thimerosal and young children. In the United States, they recommend it for every pregnant woman and every young child with influenza, full-dose thimerosal. And during the next year, there will be several hundred million children in the third world.
Hold that thought. We'll be right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Dr. Mark Geyer, his son David Geyer. And our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Mark, do you have a website where people could go and get further information?
We can be reached on our email at mgeier@comcast.net.
At comcast.net. That's mgeier@comcast.net, right?
Right. And there's also a very good website, David can tell you, that has a lot of this stuff.
It's called Mercury Free. It's the COMED website, the Coalition for Mercury Free Drugs, and the website for that is www.mercury-freedrugs.org.
Mercury-freedrugs.org. Okay,
and that has many of the documents that we're talking about: secret transcripts, publications showing harm from thimerosal and mercury.
All right, fine.
But I would like to point out one thing that I always point out. We are not anti-vaccine. We think vaccines did a great deal of good in getting rid of infectious disease. All we are is for making decent vaccines without mercury, and every vaccine known today can be and is being made without mercury. And they're being used in Europe and elsewhere, but in the United States, we refuse to change, and so we continue to give mercury-containing vaccines when we could easily, for very little more or no more money, give mercury-free vaccines. That's our only point. We want truth in vaccines, reasonable, you know, quality control, and we're for the vaccine. But we're not for putting a dangerous poison in the vaccines, which has now been conceded by the government to be causing autism, and we're in the middle of the worst epidemic. You know, some of them don't even concede there's an autism epidemic. They say that it's just better diagnosis. If it's better diagnosis and we have all these kids, show me your 50-year-old autistic. Because it should have been, you know, they've been diagnosed by now, right? Well, there are virtually none. This is a new phenomenon. They were very rare. We've caused a terrible epidemic. You mentioned ADD, ADHD. The numbers on ADD, ADHD, according to the CDC, are 1 in 6 children. And according to other numbers, they're as high as 1 in 3 children. And there's even some evidence that even the children who aren't autistic or ADD/ADHD have been damaged and don't perform as well in mathematical scores and other things. And only, God only knows what it's going to do to the cancer rates, because mercury is a known cancer causer, or what it's going to do to Alzheimer's, because it's been implicated in Alzheimer's and other chronic disorders. We don't even know what that's going to do, and I don't have a very good way of telling you that until we wait, you know, 60 years. Hopefully there'll still be some of us around to still be able to study this issue. But we got to stop yesterday giving thimerosal-containing vaccines, and they insist on doing it.
And, of course, this is the influenza vaccine that they're telling doctors to give to every pregnant woman in the first trimester,
yep,
to give to every six-month-old child, and then a series of these thimerosal-laden shots, and then, of course, to give them to our older people, or older people in nursing homes. And, of course, what a terrible tragedy, because there is a very definite relationship. We're going to be interviewing Dr. Pudenberg, who's in his 80s, the dean of vaccinologists, and he will tell you about his work showing the relationship between influenza vaccine and the incidence of Alzheimer's disease, 1,000% increase if you actually take the vaccine. And we'll have Dr. Pudenberg on, I think, sometime next week. So the information's been out there. It's been out there for a long time. And the average doctor has no idea.
We just published a paper that just came out on the history of thimerosal, going back to when it first came out. And if you read that paper, Dave can tell you the site to it, you'll find that this has been known since the 30s and 40s. And in 1948, the AMA had a convention in which they looked at the evidence and they recommended the immediate removal of thimerosal from all vaccines and all medicines. That was 1948. You know, it's 70 years later, and we still haven't done it.
And I guess I can remember when we used to use methylate and mercurochrome.
And those were withdrawn.
They were withdrawn because they were too toxic to put on the skin, but it's all right to go ahead and inject it into our children. In fact, when Congressman Dan Burton asked the people from the CDC how they could justify the fact that methylate and mercurochrome, mercury compounds, were too toxic to put on the skin, but it was all right to inject mercury into the individuals, the people of the CDC had no answers. Well, let's go to Gloria, who's calling in from Spokane. Hi, Gloria. How are you doing?
Just fine. I just wanted to mention that in the Spokesman Review on the front page, just about 3 weeks ago, there was a front page article that three babies had died after receiving their shots over in Coeur d'Alene at the same pediatric clinic. And one of the mothers, there was a picture of her and a story about her, and the child was 4 months old. He had just recently received his 4-month-old vaccinations, and I noticed that he had DPT vaccination, hepatitis, pneumococcal, which must be, I don't know exactly what that is. Is that a pneumonia type of?
Right.
Okay, so the child, it was within 3 days after the vaccination doses, and I mean, the child must have had 6 or 8 different shots. Well, I know when I had my hepatitis, for being a healthcare worker, I was in bed for 3 days. So I think it's an onslaught, you know, to their immune system to start with. I mean, to be giving children that much at once.
Okay, right.
Mention the mercury issue. I mean, and the child woke up or didn't wake up and had froth, you know, frothy blood, and a child appeared to have chicken baby syndrome, which the child did not have. I mean, it was obviously the shots in the, you know, but Ingrid Carissell wrote in an article, letter to the editor, that some parents are accused of shaken baby syndrome, and that was not the case. This was directly linked to the shots, because the child was fine and healthy until he got these shots.
Well,
and
I think
in fact, the Vaccine Compensation Act over the years has paid out many, many damages. In fact, they have a set amount, $250,000 if you die within 3 days like that of a shot.
Well, yes, and that's what the mother said, but how, you know, who cares about the money when you lose your child? So
no, my point is that they, again, they concede that you're right. But it's certainly no amount of money takes for the child, but you know, makes up for the child. But they concede that you're right. And you notice I said I was pro-vaccine, but I don't want mercury, and I want the vaccines to be used in a rational way. Giving a kid 8 shots on the same day is not a rational way. And some of those shots that this child is receiving, like hepatitis B, isn't rational for a young child, because you don't get hepatitis B until you get to be a teenager. So I'd like to see the vaccine program not designed to make it convenient for the vaccine manufacturers, but to be good for our children. By the way, I'd like to congratulate you from being from one of the few states, state of Washington, that not only has banned thimerosal, but is actually enforcing the ban.
Anything else, Gloria, before we let you
know? Well, you know, I do want to mention that in Washington State, or at least even in this private Christian school my granddaughter attends, they said, well, parents have to get, they have to have the hepatitis B shot in our kindergarten, and I called the health department, and I said, what's this all about? And they said, oh, well, it's just a precautionary thing because children, you know, they get it. And I said, well, how do they get it? I mean, you know, that's a blood transfer.
Show me a kid with hepatitis B positive, and I'll show you a kid that was sexually abused, because that's the only way you get it.
Well, in fact, the health department said that the children are having sex at age 11, and that's why they are giving these shots, and they want to give them to babies. I mean, this is outrageous. They need to teach kids proper behavior instead of giving them this.
Even at age 11, giving it at age 2 months doesn't protect you at age 11.
Just because it doesn't last that long. Anyway, thanks very much, Gloria. We've got a terrible problem, and but I think actually we have a tremendous thing. Certainly this a new decision not being talked about, but the fact that the government has conceded the first of the autism cases.
Let me make one point that everybody, all your listeners, should be aware of, and that is the health department tells you that you need vaccines to go to school. That is not true. In 40 and 50 states of the United States, there's a medical exemption. In 49 states of the United States, the state that's missing is Mississippi, there's a religious objection. In 20 states, there's a philosophical objection. Most states, the religious objection is a philosophical objection. So the real laws in most states are you either need to take the vaccine or you need to sign a waiver. And if you, I'm pro-vaccine, but if you're uncomfortable with a particular vaccine and you don't want to take that and you want your child to go to school, you contact the state and sign the waiver. They won't tell you about the waiver, but they have the waiver. And legally, you have a right to sign it if you wish to.
And so I think that's so vitally important that people understand, don't let them bulldoze you. I mean, what I've always told our listeners was, you ask them, you bring a form in for them to sign that they'll be fully responsible for any care or damage done to your child, and that it would be financially compensated if there's any damage done to your child as a result of vaccine. Just ask them to sign that before you they give you the vaccine shot, and you'll find nobody will sign that shot. Nobody will sign that. Of course they're not going to.
There's also another interesting point, which is when you have your child vaccinated, you sign an informed consent piece. It's not informed consent if you sign it under a threat that they're going to put you in jail for child abuse. That is not informed consent. Informed consent means that you get the information and you get to make a free choice. So that form, the way they're using it, is a joke. They're forcing you to sign it, and then they say, you signed informed consent. That's not consent. Consent is they give you the information, the accurate information, and then you make up your mind.
And I think that New Jersey now is trying to force everybody to get their immunizations. Is that the influenza shot, or what shot is that they're trying to get them to have?
David,
to which?
In New Jersey now is insisting that children have vaccinations. I was wondering which vaccination that is. Do you know?
That's the influenza one.
One of the ones is the flu shot. They're, I believe, if not the first, one of the first states that is now set into law that basically if you don't have your flu shot on a yearly basis as a child, you won't be able to get into school, which is a rather confusing requirement, since at least for most other vaccines, if you miss a couple of them, the vaccine remains constant, so where they give you booster shots right before you go to school, flu vaccine changes on a yearly basis, because that's why when we're exposed to flu, we get sick each year or every couple of years, because the flu changes. The vaccine tries to keep up with the changes in the strain. Not sure exactly what they're going to do if you miss the shots, but it is required, so maybe if you miss two or three of them, they'll just give you two or three of the same vaccines at one time before you go into school.
Well,
I don't know.
Of course, the influenza vaccine contains a thimerosal. Well, Mark, you were actually talking about how certainly we're giving the childhood vaccines laden with mercury to children in third world countries. What are we hearing from those third world countries where those children are being poisoned with the thimerosal? We've taken it out here for the children in our country, but we're leaving it in for children in third world countries. What sort of rationale is that? And why are the people over there accepting the free vaccines we're giving them when we won't give them to our own children?
Kennedy wrote an article on that in Rolling Stone. He pointed out, and I'm not a person that does international policy, but you know, one of the reasons America is hated so much around the world is we go in and we go in with the best intentions. We give everybody, the poor people, aid, and the first thing we do is give them our vaccine schedule, and the first thing that happens is they start getting sick. And there's an autism epidemic that began in Australia, New Zealand when we started. Autism was unknown in China. Now we give our vaccines and it's known. And the logic is that these vaccines, they don't have good refrigeration, that they can't afford the better vaccines. So we give them the junk that we don't use anymore, which is the one that all of their vaccines, or virtually all of them, have full-dose thimerosal. And we have some patients who actually are from third world countries that are actually ambassadors here, and they say you wouldn't believe the rate of autism in their countries now. It's just almost everybody is sick because they have such a massive dose. They don't even keep records there. So they don't just give the child the vaccine schedule that we have here. What they do is they go through the villages and they give the vaccines. Next month they go through the villages and they give the vaccines again. So some of these kids get 10 vaccinations and they have just horrible problems. It's just awful. And as a matter of fact, they do try to resist. In fact, some of them hide in the woods, and we've talked to somebody who runs a radio show there, and they say that they come in with people with automatic weapons to force them to take the vaccine. And they don't deny that, by the way. They think that that's appropriate.
Well, we're from the United States, and we're here to help you. And the tragedy is, I'm sure that most of the people involved in these programs really do think they're doing good. But they don't understand, because the Centers for Disease Control and the public health officials have steadfastly denied there was any danger from the thimerosal, and they've known it all along. I think David was talking about some of the special meetings that they had held in the past, the secret meetings that you had access to. Where is that? David, were you talking about the Simpsonville meeting?
Yes, Simpson Wood is one example.
Simpson Wood, huh?
Yeah, in the summer of 2000, there was another one at the National Institutes of Health in the fall of 1999. So we, working with the Congressional Committee, with Burton's Committee, were able to review these transcripts, review the notes from them, and they're scare you white kind of transcripts that they could sit there and literally, on the one hand, weigh, you know, what will this do to my career? Will I be fired? Will I not be promoted? Versus, on the other hand, the demonstration of harm. And they, emphatically, the scales tilted towards self-preservation in the transcripts. It was, we can dismiss this, we can get away with this, we know how to get around this, so we will survive, and not only survive, but actually thrive and be promoted.
If anybody wants to see some of them, they're in David Kirby's book, Evidence of Harm, although we have hundreds of, times as much of that, but the Simpsonwood transcript is in that book, and it's amazing that they had an illegal secret meeting, because you're not allowed to have a secret meeting with FDA and the drug companies. They say in it that it's a secret meeting, but they were stupid enough to keep a transcript. So you can read what they said, and anybody who reads that who doesn't get sick, isn't paying attention.
And we actually have that Simpson Wood transcript as well, if anybody's interested in it. It is, however, up on the Internet. And it's so vitally important that people get this information, and even if you don't have any children, maybe you have grandchildren, but you need to get to your parents, need to get to your children, and let them know the danger that their children are in. The thing is that do you think we've had actually a decrease in autism since we cut back on routinely using the thimerosal in childhood vaccines?
I think we have. I think the peak was in 1999, 2000. I think when we started cutting back, it went down. But I'm afraid it may be going back up again because they added the influenza. Now they give it to pregnant women. And I don't know how to even count that because the fetus is so small and so vulnerable. It may not go down now. And that may be the reason they're doing it.
And, of course, you have to ask yourself, why would they be doing that if they know it's going to be harmful? But then if the rate of autism was to fall and fall dramatically, then then the people who've been pointing at thimerosal would say, see, look at that. That proves our position was right. Ah, but how do you get around that? Why, you add the thimerosal. For pregnant women in the first trimester, and then for every child at 6 months of age and every 6 months after that? Well, we'll be back in just a moment. Our guests have been Dr. Mark and David Geyer. Well, Mark and David, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program, and it's been a fascinating hour. Are there any other issues we should be covering?
What do you think, Dave?
I think we covered it. It's mostly the thing to do is anybody that's listening is to make sure it's bolded, underscored, is to make sure that if you're going to be vaccinated, that for whether it's for yourself, for your children, grandpa, grandma, is to make sure that they're mercury free, thimerosal free.
And I actually, of course, they make that, but they don't encourage people to take it. So it's available if people ask for it, but if they don't ask for it, they're not going to make it.
And you can't have your doctor say it's okay, that this one is thimerosal free, because most of the doctors don't even read it. We have multiple people who said, you think it's free? Let me see the package insert. And they look at it and they say, it isn't. And the doctor says, oh, I thought it was. I was told it was out of everything. You can read statements.
That's one point, and the other one.
It's been out for years, and it's not been out for years.
Go ahead.
The other point is that if somebody has been damaged by a vaccine, you know, if you took a shot and you got sick after that, like the woman that called in mentioned, or if you have a grandchild with autism, you really need to strongly think about trying to file a claim in the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. That's the program that conceded this first autism case we mentioned. You should think about filing and basically starting to participate in that.
And understand that, first of all, it's no fault. You don't have to blame anybody. And secondly, you're not even taking U.S. government money. It's your money. That is, anybody who gets vaccinated in this country with most of the routine vaccines, 75 cents for each antigen is added to this fund. So if I go tomorrow as an adult and I get an influenza shot, 75 cents goes into that fund. It's the people's fund. It's there specifically to pay anybody who's damaged, and by law, they're supposed to advertise that you should come, and they're supposed to invite you to come if you even think you might have been damaged. And have you ever seen any of these ads? Because I haven't. They're not following the law. But anybody who knows of someone that way should immediately file a claim with the Act to see if you're entitled to some of your own money.
And I think... go right ahead.
And also to stand up and to be counted, at least in the case of autism, the authorities, by registering and participating in this program, as you said over and over, there are 5,000 filed today. It would be nice if the government would appreciate how big of a problem this really is.
Well, I think that some people do realize how big it is, and they hope it'll go away, at least not until they... this whole thing won't come down until they get retired. But what bothers me is the crass indifference to the human suffering. Thanks very much. God bless both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we hope that you enjoyed the program this evening. We always enjoy having Mark and David on with us. And so, Sydney, if you'd like to get a copy of this program, if they are available from Radio Liberty, call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you have children or grandchildren with autism, get hold of the Geyers, and even though they may not necessarily be able to treat you because they're on the East Coast, they can instruct other doctors how to use their protocol, which is increasingly being recognized. That, of course, if you use Lupron, suppress the testosterone level in these 5, 6, 7-year-old boys who have the abnormally high testosterone because they've been poisoned by the mercury. Oh, why then, of course, they will begin to chelate themselves. Anyway, exciting things are happening. Children are coming home from institutions now who would spend the rest of their lives in institutions if it weren't for the work of the two doctors, or at least Dr. Mark and his son David. But believe me, what they're doing is so vitally important because it will touch the lives of of millions and millions of people, not only in America, but we're poisoning the people in Africa. Now, question is, why are we doing this? Well, if you haven't yet, seen my talk, None Dare Call It Genocide, it's available on DVD, or Planned Population Reduction, a DVD production, or you'd like to read my Population Control Agenda monograph, we have that. It's available through Radio Liberty, or if you get some of the other things, we'll be glad to send you a copy of that free. That's the Population Control Agenda monograph. If you wanted to get the secret document that was published by the government in 1974 over the name of Henry Kissinger called the NSSM, the National Security Study Memorandum 200, NSSM 200, we do actually offer that as well. It's a rather large document. You'll, of course, have to or special order that. We also have the testimony by Dr. David MacArthur before the House Appropriations Committee in 1969, where he asked for $10 million to create a new disease that was be used as a mass form of killing. So the information is available from Radio Liberty. We have the Rockefeller Committee report. That's the Rockefeller Committee report put out by the Veterans Administration. They only printed up 30 copies for the entire country. Why? Because it told the truth about how they've used our soldiers and people as guinea pigs for many years. And, of course, the last thing they want is for the American people to know how they have mistreated our people and mistreated our soldiers. So that's the Rockefeller Committee report. There's so much information available from Radio Liberty you won't get elsewhere. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. Now, we do have a four-tape set on vaccinations. We have two four-tape sets on autism, but I think you would want to get the copy of the tape we did this evening if you're specifically interested in autism, along with those other tapes. We have two four-tape sets on mercury. We have DVD on mercury, one or two DVDs on mercury. We do carry David Kirby's book, Evidence of Harm, going into the background of the autism epidemic, and it is a powerful, powerful book. And we also have the Simpson-Wood transcript, the secret transcript, top secret, where the members of the CDC, meeting with members of the drug industry, figuring out how they were going to seal the truth, because they acknowledged that thimerosal was poisonous, and how are we going to conceal it from the public? That is available. These things can all be gotten by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. But your job is to let other people know, and then to pray for America, pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Remember, you can hear us 3 hours a day on RadioLiberty.com. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need reminds of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, this evening we're hoping they'll be the views of Barry Shamish. And Barry's a fascinating man. I've never met him personally, but I feel I know him. We talk to him 3 times a week, and we've been doing it for some time. He's one of those rare people who's totally dedicated to something and willing to give his life for that, and that is, he's an Israeli patriot, and he's been trying to save his country, which is Israel. Now, of course, Barry speaks several languages, very articulate. He's had to come and live in America because his life was threatened, and he almost died on several occasions while he was in Israel. And, of course, he has been writing for many years about the murder of Rabin, the premier of our prime minister of Israel, and how he was actually killed by a conspiracy involving the Shabbat, which was the FBI counterpart in Israel. And because his book, Who Murdered Rabin, has been widely circulated in Israel, probably half the people in Israel today believe that their Rabin was actually killed as part of a murder plot, an assassination plot, and that what they have been told simply is not true. It's a cover story. And just as here in the United States, why, certainly anybody who studied the murder of John Fitzgerald Kennedy knows that the mass media is still trying to make you think it was the work of a lone nut, Lee Harvey Oswald, but we actually have interviews with people who were involved, Madeleine Duncan Brown, who is Lyndon Johnson's mistress, tells about the meeting beforehand where this was planned, and certainly our interviews with Fletcher Prouty, even an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald, or with Dr. Crenshaw, who was at the Parkland Hospital when they brought President Kennedy in. I think we're the only interview with him. And he saw that the wounds that we were told were not the real wounds. He was told if he ever spoke out, he would never practice medicine. And he waited 20 years and then wrote a book. And the AMA, JAMA, actually attacked him and vilified him and demonized him, and he sued the American Medical Association, and they gave him almost $250,000 to keep him quiet, Dr. Crenshaw, and you'll hear our interview with him. All of this information available from Radio Liberty, but right now let's get back to Barry Shamish, because Barry has some amazing information about what's going on over in Israel today. As there was a planned assassination of the children of some of the leaders who are trying to maintain the sovereignty of Israel, and their children are being killed off. Barry, thanks so very much for being with us.
Well, it's always a pleasure.
And you go right ahead. I get started talking, and of course I forget it. The people really want to hear you, so you go right ahead.
Well, I'm going to try and be slow tonight. And I realize the names are unfamiliar to your audience. And look, there are 2 young Jews who were killed 5 days ago. They are David Rubin and Achiman Amichai. Strange names, but they were young Jews, 22 years old. They went on a hike into something called Nachal Telem, which is a Telem Valley. They met an SUV, an American automobile, a very expensive American automobile, and they were shot. There was a woman with them who hid in the bushes. She survived. Now look, they fought back. These brave Jews fought back, and they killed one of the terrorists, and they wounded another, and this led immediately to the discovery of who the murderers were. They were working for the Fatah Intelligence Services. Now look, I know this is tough to understand, and I relate to your listeners, I truly do, but when you've got two members of the Fatah Intelligence Corps shooting up Jews, you have to understand this was not a random incident. This was a planned incident. Now, let me do this slowly, and I hope it'll work. I have been on Dr. Stan all year long claiming the Shabak, which is the Israeli Secret Services. They're the equivalent of the FBI, have been working with Fatah to kill the most influential, the sons and daughters of Yeshas. Now again, Yesha is Judea, Sherman, and Gaza. Gaza is out, but it's still called Geisha. They have been working to destroy the best thinkers of the Yesha community. These were 22-year-old children. They were caught in a valley far, far from the closest Palestinian settlement, village, town. How did these shooters know where to shoot the Jews? The only way that could have been done was with the cooperation of the Shabak. Dr. Stan, is that clear?
And, of course, you're suggesting that they were able to track where they were because of their cell phones, and when you know where they, you can identify where everybody is. Even if your cell phone's turned off, they can identify where you are. They can even listen to your conversations. And then they were able to tell the people from the Palestinian intelligence. This would be like having several people from the CIA assassinate somebody in the United States and saying, well, that didn't have anything to do with the CIA. That was just, CIA people out there, killing people. No. If CIA people kill people, which they ordinarily don't, they hire other people to do it. But, I mean, it's because they're supposed to be doing it. And when you see people from the Palestinian intelligence agency killing prominent Jews or the families of prominent Jews, you can be jolly well sure that this is being approved of by their superiors. And who's funding their superiors? Why, you are, ladies and gentlemen, you and the Shabbat. Go ahead.
My goodness, that's so accurate.
Okay, Barry, go right ahead.
I hear music.
No, but we've got a good time now, so you just go ahead and speak up here.
All right, you were right about absolutely everything. Without the knowledge of the Jews, the shooters could not have been in this isolated nature reserve called Nachal Telem, which is a Telem, river. They couldn't have been there without help from someone in the Israeli Secret Services. I hope that's clear right now.
All right, fine. Because this is way out of the way. And, of course, how would the people know to drive down there with their SUV? These people were from the Palestinian Intelligence Agency. And, of course, it's Barry's contention, and he's probably right, that the Israeli intelligence was tracking these boys because they had cell phones. And if you have a cell phone, even if it's turned off, they can track you, know exactly where they are. In fact, you can even, with many of the cell phones, you can actually hear what the people are saying, even when the phone is turned off.
No other announcer would analyze it so accurately, precisely. Without the help of the Jews, there would not have been this murder. Now, I've been in touch, more than in touch, I've been on daily email with Dr. Daisy Stern. Now, it's not important who she is. There are a lot of Israelis who now know that these murders could not have taken place without the help of the Jews. Now, look, this is a very, very, it's a hurtful concept, but yes, people, Jews kill Jews. Now, I'm doing it as slowly as I can. The Jews and the Palestinians are wiping out all the creative minds of Judea and Samaria before Israel gives up Judea and Samaria and all of its 300,000 citizens, just like Gush Katif. No different. They're going to abandon these people. It could not be done without the Israelis and the Fatah working together. Now, this is not an easy concept, and I realize in your shows I've been too fast about this. This is a major concept. There is a secret government in Israel working with the Fatah, and they are killing off the best and the brightest of Judea and Samaria. We got stage one. Stage two, who were these kids? The kids were David Rubin and Amikam Amichai. Amikam Amichai is the son of Rabbi Yehuda Amichai. He is the head of the Torah and Land Institute, which was once, well, it was founded in Gush Katif, in other words, in Gaza. That is his son. David Rubin's father is the head of a major yeshiva in Hebron, a yeshiva I have spoken at and lectured at. His father was the founder of what is called, well, in Hebrew, Kippah Sruqah, the minute Kippah Jews. Again, a tough concept, but I'm going to try to explain this. When you have a minute Kippah, you are a member of Judea and Samaria, Jewish nationalism. These kids were not just normal kids. They were the children of major Judea and Samaria leaders, and they were both killed in an ambush. Next stage, they screwed the ambush up. It was a snafu. They killed these kids, these brave 22-year-old kids from Hebron, killed one of the terrorists. They mortally wounded a second of the terrorists, and they found the SUV. We have evidence. Next, who gives the Palestinian Authority SUVs? They cost in America $40,000. In Israel, they cost $50,000. Look, the terrorism business is not that good that you can buy an SUV unless the Americans supplied the SUV. We have the car, we have a dead body, we have the proof, and now we have in Israel the very, very ugly fact that the terrorists work for the Fatah intelligence services. This was not a simple act of terrorism. This was an act between the Israeli Shabak and the Fatah intelligence services to kill the young leaders of Judea and Samaria. We have caught them. Have I made this point clear enough?
Well, I think you've made it clear to me, and I think it should be very, very obvious to our listeners that, I mean, these intelligence agents are not going to just be out in the evening shooting a couple of Jews. I mean, obviously, they knew who they were, they knew where they were, and they were sent there to kill them. And they, unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately, why, of course, one of the Palestinian intelligence officers was killed, one of them was mortally wounded, and they were able to track them down. The Jews got the SUV, and fortunately, of course, this girl was hiding in the bushes, and she saw this whole thing. She was able to tell the authorities, and then now they have captured these. And are these people in jail, are these Palestinian?
No, of course not. Why, oh boy, they're being protected by Abbas, by Mahmoud Abbas, head of the PLO or Fatah. It's the exact same thing. They are being protected. Now, again, this was the biggest snafu, I wouldn't say since the Rabin assassination, but really, evidence-wise, it's way up there. We have now finally got proof that Shabak and Fatah are working together to get the Jews out of Judea and Samaria by killing their most creative and intelligent young children, the sons of the most prominent rabbis in Judea and Samaria were shot. Now, I've been saying this for a solid year, that there is in Judea and Samaria a campaign to knock off anyone who could protest, who could lead a protest against this worldwide, well, campaign. I'm using a good word, campaign against the Jews. When this horrible incident took place, we have the evidence that Israel, or at least the secret Israeli government, it is not the Israeli Jews, it is not the Israeli citizens, it is a very secret, disgusting, murderous, gang, led ultimately, and I will go into that tonight, by Shimon Peres, the president of Israel, to get rid of the Jews of Judea and Samaria by killing off their brightest thinkers. This is what happened this week, and we caught them.
Well, I'm certainly so glad. People have to understand that the United States is giving massive amounts of money to the terrorists. Why would you do that? Why would you give money to Fatah? These people are terrorists. You say, well, they're not as bad as the Hamas terrorists. Who created the Hamas terrorists? You go back, a number of years, you find out that the CIA and Israelis created the Hamas. We have a wonderful book called The Devil's Game that goes into how we have created these terrorist groups, and it's the devil's game. We recommend it very strongly to you, and now we see the end result of this. But even today, they're talking about giving $500 million to the Fatah terrorists. They're the moderate terrorists. They're the good guys. They'll fight off the Hamas bad terrorists. They're all terrorists. They all hate Israel. Why is the United States and, of course, a certain component within Israel actually helping and financing the enemies of Israel? Doesn't make any sense.
Well, it certainly does if you're me.
I know.
I've been living with this stuff for 14 years.
I know, Barry. And then it makes sense to me as well, and I hope it makes sense to a lot of our listeners. But that was sort of a catchphrase. It doesn't make sense, but of course it does make sense, because if it doesn't make sense, there's got to be another explanation. So you pick up the story there.
Well, let us turn to the newspaper Haaretz. Now, again, tonight I'm going slowly. I hope we can put these facts into slow transition. Haaretz is the New York Times of Israel.
In other words, it's the most prominent newspaper in Israel.
Well, it's the most prominent intellectual newspaper in Israel. Yediot would be the New York Post, and Maariv would be the New York Sun, but Haaretz is the Times, where all the intellectuals of Israel read Haaretz for their news, and the people don't. Let's leave it at that. We won't dive into the depth of this. David Landau, in proper Israeli Hebrew, is the editor of Haaretz. Now, it was 20 days ago that Condoleezza Rice was in Israel, and she had a meeting at the home of Richard Jones. He is the ambassador for the United States to Tel Aviv. We have just done last week a show. Well, the horrible fact is Richard Jones ordered the Israeli Attorney General, Nuri Benes, to deprive all civil and judicial rights to any Jew who lives in the so-called disputed territories or Judea and Samaria.
They want to get him out of there, but we'll be back in just a moment. Barry, pick this story up.
Now, Richard Jones has a little party where journalists are invited to meet Condoleezza Rice. By the way, I have no words to describe my utter disgust at Condoleezza Rice. She is an anti-Semite. She is dangerous. And she's going to destroy Israel as fast as she can. David Landau, the David Landau, editor of Haaretz, addresses the 20 journalists. He is sitting beside Condoleezza Rice. He stands up and he tells the assembled, especially Condoleezza Rice, that he hopes America will rape Israel. And I hope your listeners heard this, rape Israel. Now, all I can say is, may this David Landau go into a prison where he knows what rape really is. Okay, but that's the word he used. Now, all the journalists were shocked, but it took 20 days for two journalists to say the editor of Haaretz told Condoleezza Rice to rape Israel. Now, I cannot be overly dramatic how disgusted I am that the editor of Israel's equivalent of the New York Times told Condoleezza Rice to come and rape Israel. Now, when he was caught, and by the way, it became a national news item, Israel has only two commercial television channels. On the Big One, Channel 2, the news got out. He was interviewed. Now, hear what he says, people. Remember, David Landau, if you don't know, is a religious, so-called Orthodox Jew, wears a kippah. It's a fake. Okay, let's leave it at that. It's a fake. He tells Channel 2 News that he has had this wet dream. I repeat the word, the phrase, wet dream, that America would force itself on Israel to create a peace that it desires on Israel since 1976. I repeat, people, wet dream. No religious Jew, nobody who calls himself Orthodox would use the word wet dream. And this is what he tells the Israeli public. He's had a wet dream that America would rape Israel. Dr. Sam, can you believe this?
No, it really sounds very, very out of character for a religious Jew to say something like that. And why would any religious Jew want Israel harmed badly or destroyed?
Harmed? Raped? Look, you know, you've got a listener named, well, his first name is Archie, and he wanted the URL to the site where actually David Landau told us to Condoleezza Rice, and I provided it for him, and he wrote me back and said, where is this news in America? Where is it? I searched Google. I looked everywhere I could.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry was talking about a gentleman named David Landau, who is the publisher of a newspaper called Haaretz, and it's the sort of the New York Times of Israel. And David Landau, who professes to be a Orthodox or certainly a religious Jew, and he wears a little skull cap there, but he went to this meeting with Condoleezza Rice about 20 days ago, got up at the meeting, and there were a number of reporters there, and said that he wants the United States to rape Israel. He wanted the United States to rape Israel. Well, several of the reporters actually reported that. Landau was called, you know, and went on television and said, well, he had this recurrent wet dream that the United States would come in and force Israel into this peace agreement. That is not a nice thing to say, not at all. And yet, this is one of the most influential men in all of Israel. After all, when you're the editor of the major intellectual newspaper, and you tell the American Secretary of State that you want the United States to rape Israel, go ahead, pick the story up there, Barry.
Well, it gets worse, of course. After the two Jews, again, Reuben and Amichai, I'm doing this slower tonight so the word actually sinks in. After they were killed, and they killed one of their assailants, Haaretz David Lando printed a long, well, you would call it investigative. I would call it yellow journalism. Nonetheless, what he claimed was that Ami Chayim Rubin was the head of a new Jewish terror organization, and they were nipped in the bud. Now, pardon my anger, because this is just nonsense. They were not nipped in the bud. They were not the heads of a Jewish terror organization. Haaretz lied, and the person who approved the story was David Lando. And by the way, the journalism I do is honest. When I hear something like this, I don't have the anger in me to describe my feelings. This is not honest journalism. This is, well, the National Review times 1,000, cheap yellow journalism. And this is going on in Israel. Now, because of this article, the Israeli police broke in. I mean, broke in. There was no permission. No rabbi gave them a key. They broke into the morgue where Amichai and David Rubin were lying dead on tables, and they took their bodies, and they looked for signs of drugs. They looked for signs of terrorism, whatever you find under someone's fingernails, and this was all to the horrible disregard of the victims of terrorism. And this is what is going on as reality in Israel. And I got to tell you, most of the time I'm very calm with you, and I'm not angered with you. I just look at this as the reality that Israel lives with. But I got to tell you, I am actually very angered by all this. The man who has a wet dream that Israel is raped is spreading this garbage around, and I'm telling Stan Monteith instead of the people of Israel, because the people of Israel somehow or another accept this as their reality, and believe me, I don't know why. I haven't figured out why.
Well, I really believe there's a spiritual blindness that people really do not see the things that are before their eyes. One of these days they will, though. And we've got to be there, and you've got to be there to guide them when they suddenly begin to wake up to the fact that we are living a nightmare, and of course this is all being coordinated by the people who hate Israel and the people who hate America. Because our nations are connected. We can't separate them. They are connected, and they will remain for some time. But right now, of course, the people in the United States who control our government, the Council on Foreign Relations, are intent upon the destruction of the State of Israel. And as you've often heard me say, we have a lot of people who keep writing to me telling me the Zionists control Washington, D.C. and our State Department. And I say, well, if the Zionists control Washington, D.C. and the State Department, they're doing a terrible job. They force the Jews out of Gaza. They're trying to force them out of Judea and Samaria. I mean, they're doing everything they can to hurt Israel. Why would the Zionists be doing that? I guess they're not very smart. Well, I think the people who are doing these things are very
order. It doesn't matter if you do or don't. The NATO troops divide Israel from the Palestinians. Now, what makes this shocking is that Abbas agreed to this. Now, of course, Abbas recognizes. Abbas is nobody. He lost the last Palestinian election. He represents nobody. But Israel's foreign minister, her name is Livni, agreed with Abbas that Israel would accept NATO troops.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and because Barry is pointing out that Sarkozy, and Sarkozy is, of course, the new Prime Minister of France, had met with Mohamed Abbas. Abbas is the, well, he's really nothing. He ran for the presidency of the Palestinian state, and he lost. But, of course, because, you know, he doesn't represent anybody, why, of course, the Israelis keep working with him, because they don't want to work with Hamas. So Abbas, who has no political standing at all in Palestine, is the man that Sarkozy goes to.